Welcome to the Free to Lead podcast, journeys of leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. My name is Will Steele. I'm the host of the show. I'm a transformational business and leadership coach. I say transform the business owner, you transform the business. So if you want to be the fullest version of yourself in the world, decisive, taking clear action, moving forward, producing the kind of results and having the kind of impact you really want to have in your business, in your life, and in the world, then stay tuned. The people on this show that we interview are handpicked. They've got pearls of wisdom. They're going to share their breakdowns, breakthroughs, their challenges, what they've dealt with, how they've grown, and how they've become free to lead. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, I'd love to hear from you, and I'll be telling you how you can get in contact in about 20 minutes' time. Right now, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Free to Lead, Journeys of Leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. And today on the show, we have Michelle Locke, and I'm thrilled to have Michelle on the show. She's a former family court judge and a seasoned family law attorney, or for you guys in the UK, a lawyer. And she joined us today. She's had this remarkable career that spans both the bench and the private practice. And she brings unparalleled knowledge in handling some of the most complex and emotionally charged cases in family. And today we're going to be looking at leadership. We're going to be looking at what stops people moving forward and what gets in the way of people taking the action they need to take. An interesting kind of pivot for the show. Michelle, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. And when you talk about pivots, that's half of what I talk about is in life, you got to be willing to pivot. And as a trial attorney, if I can't pivot, then I'm not a really good trial attorney. Yeah. And so pivoting is central to where I've gotten to where I am in my life is because I've had to pivot my entire career to move forward. And it's interesting. That's what you started off without even knowing too much about me, that you really honed in on the pivot part first. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done quite a lot of these podcasts now, probably about 40, I think I've recorded over 40. And I start to reflect on them. No disrespect to anybody who's been on the show or me hosting the show. It's just been a particular idea of getting people's story and what they've dealt with versus what's actually happening now. What's actually there now that you're dealing with, that you're confronted by maybe. And people don't talk about that. People like to put on a front, everything's cool, everything's sorted out. But I have found that the breakthroughs for people happen when they tell the truth, when they open up. I'm not saying you're there, but it's interesting that here we are. What do you think your biggest challenge is at the moment?
Oh, for me, the biggest challenges the last 5 years have turned into my health. And that's actually one of the reasons why I started doing podcasts and doing kind of my own platform, because my career and the career choice that I've done for the last 23 years is really not conducive to a healthy lifestyle. Being in court and arguing for a living and taking on your clients' feelings, passions, and concerns, their family, yourself, taking that upon yourself when you're in court, wears you out. And so starting in 2000 during COVID, it was the first time that I'd ignored some health symptoms for about 5 years. And in November 2020, they caught up with me. And I ended up in emergency surgery for my C5 and C6. My doctor at the time, who's still my surgeon now, told me that I was risking permanent paralysis, and he didn't know how long I'd gone since that, how I'd gotten on so far without really being in front of him much sooner. Yeah. So I think from the minute I had the MRI results to when I was in surgery was less than 10 days.
Yeah, that's the neck, right?
That was the neck.
Joint. You're wearing a collar right now, just for people who are...
Yeah, for people who can't see, I'm a C collar right now because I had surgery 10 days ago, as a matter of fact, to additionally help reinforce C4 and C5. But since then, and including this last surgery that I had 10 days ago, I've had 15 medical procedures where I have to be under anesthesia since November 2020. And there's a book that a good friend of mine told me to read called The Body Keeps Score. Yeah. And read it. Well, reading it would be an exaggeration. I listen to it on tape as I'm driving to and from work because traffic for me is about an hour to get to my office from where I live. And so it's about 2 hours commuting each day. And I listen to it. And it's really true. It's your body keeps score on everything you've done to it. And it appears, and the consequences of that appear when you don't have time for it. And so your body makes you check out whether you want to or not. And so it has really forced me to reassess what my next phase of my career is and how do I get there knowing some of the limitations that I have now. And so that kind of brings me to podcasting and sharing my message, what I've been through for 23 years now, and helping really the next generation of lawyers. We call it standing on my shoulders so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. I grew up, I didn't have a mentor. I learned by hook or by crook, and I learned by literally putting my head in the proverbial chopping block and getting my head chopped off a few times. And I think in life, you learn much, much more from your losses than from your wins. But you're never going to have any wins or losses unless you make the attempt to move forward. And so it's the same thing I teach my children that I teach the young attorneys, which is the worst thing someone could tell you is no. And then you're in the exact same position that you were before. So what are you hesitating for? There's no reason to hesitate. You just take that chance, you move forward, and you don't put your toe in the water, you dive in. Now, you can take your time to dive in, but eventually you're going to have to dive in. And I tell my kids that all the time. And I don't think I really fully embraced that until I was older. I would say in my 40s. When I hit about 45, it's kind of when the switch flipped, where I said, no, no more. But that's where I got to talk to you today, which is that you've got to pivot in life. And while you start your career when you're younger, what they say is your career will change or evolve at least three different times during the lifetime of your career. And that's where I'm at now. I'm pivoting. I've been a trial attorney for 23 years and a focus primarily in family law for most of those years. I was a full-time family law judge for 5 of those years. And now I am still in private practice. I'm a full-time municipal court judge for a local city in Central Texas, as well as my private practice. And then I'm doing my own podcast and speaking events, et cetera, to try and send the message of being your authentic self. Because if you're not your authentic self, you're not moving forward in life. People see through. It's like we were talking about just a second ago, which is people want to tell you how great they are, how successful they are, without looking at what the skeletons are in the closet. And they want to pretend that everything's perfect. And the reality is, I think if more people were honest about the crap that's behind them, the stuff they've gone through to get them to where they are, it would make people relate to you more. You become more relatable. You become more authentic. You become more trustworthy because you're willing to say, hey, I screwed up too.
Yeah, great.
And it's okay. It's okay to screw up. It's how you move forward from it.
Yeah. It's just interesting that you mentioned before that it gets stuck. What is it? The Body Keeps Score, which is a great book.
The Body Keeps Score.
Yeah. I also have a business partner in the Middle East, and his whole thing is about all illnesses are due to an imbalance in the emotions. And he asked me to come up and create a leadership program, which I did. And then I announced to him and said, these imbalances, the emotions, where they start is where there is to go and look. So the work I do is I get back to what happened. Something happened, and then it's not what happened. It's what the interpretation was, what decisions you made. What did you make that mean about you? What did you make it mean about others? What did you make it mean about life? What now did you think, now I have to do this to make up for that? There's a whole bunch of talk and decisions that get made in these pivotal moments in time in somebody's life. And gone unchecked, you all of a sudden, if you decided you're not wanted, or if you decided you're not good enough, or you decided, I don't know, that you're a bad person, you store that in the body, and that turns into illness later. So putting those two, my philosophy with his philosophy, is accelerating the whole program. And so I'd be interested, if you'd be interested, to have a look at this neck problem you've got, see if we can actually get to the bottom of it. Would you be
interested? Oh, I'd love to, because I don't have any doubt that it came. I'm recently divorced. I was married for 23 the rim, trying to think, because it's been 24th anniversary. I was married for 22 years and then was divorced last year, in addition to had both my knees replaced last year, but was divorced last year as well. And so it's like last year was a year I'm like, I'm so ready for 2024 to close the books on it. But I don't have any doubt at all that the majority of my problems came from the continual stress my body was under for 22 years. I don't have any doubt. I raised two other children that weren't mine, and I took them on as my own. I wouldn't change that I did that. I've had three children of my own. They're now 21, 19, and 9. And so I don't have any doubt that what I've been through has contributed to this. I also know that my continual go without stopping has caused me a bunch of problems as well, because I don't rest, I don't take breaks, I don't holiday. We call it vacation in the States. I think you all call it holiday.
Yeah.
And I just don't. I think with my first son, I was back in the office when he was 7 weeks old. With my second son, I was back working a little bit when I had C-sections for all three. I was back at work within 3 weeks of his C-section. It's only with my last one that I actually took 12 weeks off. And 12 weeks is still not enough time. It's just not. And in fact, I think the U.S. has some of the worst maternal leave policies of any industrialized nation there is. But I can't do much about it. And then the other problem is, because of where I live, and it's such a male-dominated culture, at least in the court system it is, family law litigation is a little more not as a gender difference with men and female attorneys. It's a little more closer to even. But litigation is heavily driven by men. There are very few female attorneys that try cases at the level that I do. There are some. There are some very good ones where I'm at. But as a general rule, you're going to find mostly men doing it. And I think I wrote an article it's on my LinkedIn website. I do a newsletter. I try to get it to once a month if I can. But I wrote about the consequences of being the good wife, is that we have to have the profession, we have to have the career, we have to bring home money as well and excel in our profession, in addition to raising the children, in addition to knowing where all their school appointments are, doctor's appointments are, making sure they get to those, in addition to making sure your husband's happy at the end of the day. And now that I'm divorced, what I'm looking for is someone that's going to take that burden, some of that burden off my plate, as opposed to have it on it. And so my next partner, I may not find one that meets those requirements that I have now, because otherwise, why would I date someone? Why am I going to bring more stress into my life? If you're going to come help me, then great. But if you're not, then it's not worth my time. I don't need anything else added to my plate to add to my poor health. I don't need that. But yeah, right. Do I agree that what I've gone through has contributed to my health? 100%.
I don't think we'll get all the way back there in this conversation where that all started. But if you look back with your neck, when did you start noticing a problem with your neck?
So I would say 2015, 2016 is probably when because I know I ignored the problem for about 5 years. But I think 2015, 2016 is really when the problems started. And it was a stiff neck, sore neck. And I attributed it for 5 years to the stress of doing what I do for a living. Trying jury trials is not something that is unstressful.
So what was actually happening at the time when we started to notice it?
It would have been after the birth of my third son. And I think there's a lot of family dynamics around that at the time. We had my ex-husband had two daughters. One was in college at that time and had come home during Christmas and caused some disputes in the family at Christmas that resulted in me I think it was 5 or 6 months pregnant, basically picking her up out of a chair and throwing her on the ground and telling her to get out of the house because she was engaging in some inappropriate behavior. And for the first time ever, my ex-husband at the time supported that decision. Usually he left me to be the disciplinarian of the girls, but would never back me in that discipline until that particular incident. And then his other daughter was a senior in high school at that time. And then my boys were 12 and 10, 12 and 9, 12 and 10 at that time. And then I was working, and I was a full-time judge at that particular time.
Okay. And then you get to the moment you first notice it, what was happening? Was it some upset?
Sitting at my desk, sitting at my office desk going, God, my neck hurts. Where's the heating pad? And then in 2016, I quit my...
Don't go further. Just come back to that. Oh. There you are at the desk. You go, God, my neck's hurt.
It wouldn't have been until I moved. I think the first time I noticed it would have been 2016, where I moved from far west Texas to central Texas, which was about 600 miles. And I gave up my judgeship and started a career over from scratch, from square one in a new city. And that's when I really started noticing the neck pain.
Okay. And okay. So what we're trying to find is at the moment in time when you had a thought that would be connected to the neck pain, connected to the neck represents not wanting to look in a certain direction, not wanting to look at that and move forward. So what does that remind you of that was happening at the time? Tell me about what was happening around you at the time. So you said you moved.
Oh, it was chaos. It was absolute chaos between, at the time, my husband and I were not getting along, and I literally picked up and left with the kids and moved to Austin, and he stayed behind to sell our house to eventually join us. And so I picked up and left and took the kids. I mean, his and I's marriage has always been problematic and not the best. I think when I finally got divorced, I think I'd filed for divorce six times against him before I actually went through with it. Uh-huh. One of the hazards of being a divorce attorney, and he was an attorney as well. He was a prosecutor. And so can you imagine those arguments? And I picked up and left with three kids. One was 10 months old and moved. I'm sorry, no, that's not true. He was 8 months old when I moved. And so I think I didn't want to look back at where I came from for numerous reasons, included my father, who has since passed away, included his wife. I don't know where she's at now, thank God. But it really stemmed from everything bad had happened in El Paso, and I needed to leave. And also, here's where I know it came from. I'd run a race for district court judge because in Texas, I can't tell you about other states, but in Texas, our judges are elected.
Yeah.
And so I had run a race for district court judge and I lost. Oh. And that was the first time in my career where I had not succeeded based on like merit, like who worked harder, who was a better candidate, all of those things. And that loss for me was the hardest loss of my life. But I talk about it now when I go talk about my recommendations or how to my motivational speaking, I use it as the example for my biggest loss in life, but also my biggest professional loss in life. But also, I am forever grateful that I lost. Though, well, of course, that's looking back in retrospect 6-7 years later.
Just before you go there. So let's take it. So you lost this thing. You lost the race. You lost getting elected, right?
Yep.
Where were you when you found that out?
Oh, it was election night. You can find out election night after the polls close. So within
an hour of office, we were at some event. Where were you?
Yeah, I was at my congratulatory. We thought we were going to win.
Got it.
And so I was literally outside of the restaurant leaving. And yeah. I was angry, hurt, crying, frustrated.
When did you get the news? Before you left or as you were leaving? Or where were you?
No, when we arrived, I got the news. So I had to pretend. I had to hold my stuff. Pretend's the wrong word. I had to hold my stuff together while I went and greeted all my supporters and people that had been there to help me and support me. And so, yeah, I found out before I even walked into the restaurant that night.
Wow, that's a tough experience, right?
It was, especially when to think about it, during the campaign, I'd had major reconstructive ankle surgery. So I ended up like block walking, going and knocking on people's doors on crutches. And so when I say I put my heart and soul into it, I really did. I middle of surgery, I took a couple of days off and then I was back to campaigning and busting my butt to campaign and literally doing it on crutches, walking door to door.
Yes. So you're extremely driven, right?
Extremely. So, to a fault, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a longer conversation. We could get to the source of that.
Right.
We're just working on the neck at the moment. So you got the news. You had to go and see everybody in the restaurant. You came out. You're angry. What did all that mean? What did you make it mean? What did it mean to you? What did you make any decisions from that moment?
Yeah, it was a decision for me that it was time to leave where I was, my hometown that I grew up in.
It's time to leave.
It was time to leave.
Yeah. All right. What else did it mean?
To me, it meant that I was a failure. Honestly, it meant that because I'm sitting here today, I still believe that I was a better candidate. That being said, it was, yeah, it, what did I was angry. I was hurt. I was frustrated by the system, frustrated by the proverbial like knives that have been stuck in my back by people that I thought were helping, but they really weren't. It was, there were some good takeaways that I definitely carried with me to this day.
Hold on, so knives in my back. So if you now believe that these people you trusted, presumably, or you thought were on your side, and you feel like you've got knives in your back, any decisions there about the
No,
business?
not the whole decision for me at that point was I'm leaving this town.
Yes.
Because I can't get any farther in life than I am right where I'm at now, and that was not okay for me. I wanted more.
I'm just interested, this knives in the back thing, given you've got the problem in your back and your neck, you make some sort of decision like, I can't trust anyone anymore, or I'm on
It
my own.
definitely changed who I trusted. It made me a little bit on the bitter side of people can say all day long that they're your supporter, but it really goes back to actions speak louder than words. And so it really probably changed my perspective on who really in life has your back. And so that probably made my circle much smaller because you learn the people. And then you really realize during a campaign, at least I did, and I don't think that my experience is unique, but you also learn just how willing your friends are to support you publicly. Like they may hang out with you all day long, right? And go to dinner, y'all dinner parties and Christmas parties, but them actually being willing to support you publicly is an entirely different ball game. And so that kind of goes back to your authentic self. If you're not willing to stand up for someone who you purport to be your friend, then you're not that person's friend. Like you, if you're not standing up for them and saying publicly, hey, I support this person, here's why, because you're worried about other repercussions and you're really not being your authentic self with your friend and you're really not a friend. So I learned that. I think that's probably where the authentic self probably came from is, and then learning to see through people to know when they're being authentic or not.
Yeah, so there's now something you're operating from. Can you see what it is? Like a decision there?
Yeah, so trust no one and start over with a new circle of friends that I don't have that history with because it was time to reevaluate, reassess, and restart.
Yeah. So trust no one. And I don't want to look back.
Ironically enough, I can no longer look back. I can't turn my head to the side long enough to look back.
Yeah. And trust no one, though. Is it true you can't trust no one?
I don't think you can trust. I think it's difficult to trust someone implicitly. I think there are very few people in life
My question was, is it true you can't trust anyone?
Wow, you almost sound like a lawyer. No, that would not be a true statement.
Yeah, it's not the truth. God didn't say that, but it's become your truth.
Right.
And so if I can't trust anyone now, or trust no one, what's the impact of that? How's that kind of start to shape things?
It really shut me down. And then you're operating within a box, and that's not really a good place to operate either. And then that comes, and then, so what you find in life, I think, is, and I think listeners will probably find this true, is that the pendulum can only swing so far. And once you get to the extremes, you can't stay at the extremes forever because that's not the answer either. The pendulum usually falls somewhere in the middle. And so I think immediately after the campaign, my pendulum of everyone can kiss off, right? I think that pendulum went as far as it could go. And then when I moved to Central Texas and started over, well, by the way, like where I moved from was 600 miles away from where I came from. And that's only halfway across the state, just to give you the perspective. And so moved 600 miles away. And I think only after I had been here probably 2 years before I started getting out of that box, so to speak, of that box of don't trust, don't just, it's your core family and that's it. It probably took me a couple of years here before I started getting, I guess, leaving that really closed box that I had swung to so quickly after the campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then how does that show up in your neck, do you think? Those two things. I'm not going to look back. I can't look back. And I can't trust people. I got to really trust no one, blah, blah, blah.
It's like your head is no longer on a swivel, which is interesting. Because sometimes your head's on a swivel if you don't trust anyone, then you're always like on the lookout, right? And that's the one part of if you don't trust people. And the other part is you get tunnel vision. And so you don't look around to see what's going on. You just stay in your own little bubble and that's it. I'm trying to think where I knew the neck pain came from. I think it really started with the loss of that campaign. Because I carried that with me for a good, because that was 2013, 2014. I carried that with me, that loss, that particular painful loss for 5, 6 years at least, before I really started to change the lookout on it, which was, it was a blessing because I don't, because looking back.
Well, you did great. You carried that with you, right? And it's painful and you're carrying it with you. It's something about you. So what did it mean for you about you? So I got you can't trust others. Okay, I got that.
It meant that I was a failure.
Yeah, but what does that mean to you? I'm a failure.
I don't know what it means, a failure. That's a hard one. I guess for me, it was all the values that I was taught as a child didn't hold to be true. I guess that was, I didn't meet all of those. I couldn't trust all of those measures that I was raised to believe were all those values that hard work pays off, that the good guy wins, that always do the right thing because you come out ahead in the end. Like all of those things you're taught as a child to believe in, I found out in that campaign were not true. The good guy doesn't always win. Good deeds don't always result in the right thing happening down the road. And good deeds can be undone. And you can work and work and work and work and work harder than the next person, but it doesn't mean you're going to get ahead of them. And so all those isms that we grew up learning, I think for me, all came crashing down when I lost that campaign.
It's like everything I held dear or true.
Absolutely. Everything I held dear or true turned out to be inaccurate, at least in that particular instance. But welcome to politics. That's why I don't think I'll ever jump back into politics ever again. No thanks.
Yeah.
It takes a special kind of person to really live in politics. I don't have the fortitude to do it.
Wait, listen, see, that's now part of your story.
It is.
You've made that up following that event. Now, if it was something you wanted to do because you wanted to change the law or you wanted to make a difference, or it's like, right now you've now written it off. You can't go there.
But yeah,
if you were to go there knowing what you know, how would it be different now? What do you see is the opportunity? Could be, I'm not asking you to go into politics, but if you did now, can you see a possibility that you couldn't see up to now because of those decisions? Like you can't trust anyone and they haven't got your back and all these values don't really hold true.
I would be smart about how I ran a campaign. That's for sure.
I bet.
It would definitely be different how I ran the campaign. I also, and I think it'd be different for a couple of reasons, because I think this time around, it would be more my authentic self as opposed to the polished image that they wanted to portray. And then the attacking of the other side, I don't know, necessarily matched with who my authentic self is. And I think I would probably handle that differently if I had to do it again, sitting here today, knowing all the things I know.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's a good place to kind of leave it. You've done really well in such a short period of time. I just finished writing my book called Free to Lead. Become the authentic, powerful leader you were born to be.
Oh, it's ironic that we just left on that. We stopped on that.
Exactly. With the Fitra method. And I didn't plan to say that, but I just spent all weekend doing the final edits. So it'll be coming out in probably about 3 months. But you got to it. You got to, I would be my authentic self, because there's nothing more powerful than being your authentic self.
I agree.
People don't have access to it because they're all wrapped up in things they've made up about themselves and about life and about others and strategies that they're embroiled in. They don't realize they're caught up, driven, never going to fix whatever they're trying to compensate for. So, yeah, if you did want to run, and
it sounds like we have a series to go. It sounds like you have to bring me back.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. It'd be interesting to first get your first job is to get well.
Oh, I completely agree with you. My first job is absolutely to get
well. Get well. And then if you do fancy running, you should come back and call me. We can go to work.
Okay, let me know. I'll let you know. But yeah, no, it was, this definitely took a far left turn from where I thought we were going to start today. So I absolutely love that, because today you got the, I really have, now that I've gotten older, take it or leave it. Like, this is me. You're either going to love me or you hate me. And I'm at the point in my life where I don't care which one it is you choose.
Wonderful. That gives you some freedom.
It does.
Yeah. So it's been great having this. This is the first of where I'm now going with the podcast, because let's just get real with people. And
it's so much better just to get, just to own your shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say in Texas, sorry. But just own your...
I've led programs in Texas a lot. I kind of, once they trust you, you're in. But you've got no chance.
You got no chance.
That's right.
But once they trust you, then you're in for good forever.
That's right.
People love this, though.
Yeah. How would they reach out to you if they wanted to find out more about you?
Well, easiest way to find me is my website. It's michellelock.com. That's the easiest way to find me.
Spell M-I-C-H-E-L-E, yes?
E-L-E, correct, because I'm actually French-Canadian, and so it's Michelle, but no one in Texas knows how to say it that way, so it's just michellelock.com.
Wonderful. Great. It's been great having you on the show today. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah. All right.
Will Steele here. Thanks so much for listening to the Free to Lead podcast, Journeys of Leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. If you're a successful leader and you're driven by passion and you're inspired by your purpose and you'd love to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. Just visit podcast.willsteele.com. That's podcast.willsteele.com. Will Steele is spelled W-I-L-L-S-T-E-E-L, all one word. If you got something out of today's interview and you'd love to share it on your social media, we'd love you to do that. You can take a screenshot on your phone, you can text it to a friend or post it on your socials. And if you know someone you think they'd be a great guest, tag them on social media or just let them know about the show and include the hashtag Free to Lead. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, your reviews, and your comments go a long way to help promote the show. And that means a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, go to our website, willsteele.com, or follow me on LinkedIn under Will Steele, or Facebook under Will Steele, or Instagram under Will Steele Coaching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.